for a long time, I really thought like, oh, these guys are just like God-given ability and talent, you know? And you're like, oh, I can never touch that. And then you just listen to all of them talk and they're like, no, I just worked my ass off. And you're like, okay. And then they're like, yeah, I was in the gym, first person in the gym, last person out of the gym. Like I installed a hoop at my house. So I was shooting from bed. You know what I mean?
Welcome to Latinx in Power, a podcast hosted by Thaisa Fernandes.
Welcome to Latinx in Power. Today, I have a pleasure to talk with Natalie Marquino, a former professional rugby player born in Colombia who turned to a business leader. With a BS, finance, in international business, Natalie is helping to make design accessible as an EMEA head of sales at Figma. She also worked at LinkedIn and Twitter previously. Welcome, Natalie.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a true pleasure to be here.
I'm always so inspired to hear stories from people who break into tech. And I also came from a non-technical background, and Natalie's story is so impressive. So I'm really happy to have you here, Natalie. And this is one of my favorite questions, and I'm super excited to ask you that too. So what does it mean to be a Latina for you?
I've been thinking about that question a lot, and I really appreciate that you ask it because I think it means different things to different people. For me, it's been a work in progress, definitely. A little bit of background. My mom's Colombian. I was born in Colombia in Cali, but my dad's Swiss. And so I grew up mostly in Switzerland and then moved to the US. Growing up outside of Colombia, I always felt like a little bit of an outsider, a bit of a fraud when it came to owning my Latin heritage. And it's only recently that I've really started to feel like I could own up to it and make it my own. And so I spent quite a bit of time in Colombia about 4 years ago and visited a lot of the different regions of the country. I think one of the things I love the most about it is that it's so diverse, both culturally, you know, in terms of the biodiversity, there's a lot there to learn. And, you know, you're able to draw some amazing things, or at least I was, from that experience. And so I realized that Latinas are very resourceful, inventive, entrepreneurial. There's a joy for life that I just absolutely love. And so it's a journey for me. And each day I try to own that identity a little bit more. I'm also Afro-Latina, so that's another layer that you have to put on top of things. And so owning all of those different pieces is something that I'm always trying to do a little bit better and feel like part of that community.
Yeah, it answers beautifully. Thank you for sharing. And I love like the sense that it's also a work in progress, right? Especially when sometimes we grow up in a different country or move to another country. I think it's also finding ways to see our identities and feel close to our country, although we are not like physically in the same space. And I always love the answers that I get. They are always different, but at the same time, I see a lot of similarities and I feel like really inspired. So thank you for sharing. And how your journey started?
I grew up in Geneva, Switzerland, and I was there until I turned 16. Just before 17, I moved to the US, but was always big into sports, played a variety of sports growing up. I ended up moving to the US to play basketball in college. So I was able to land a Division I basketball scholarship and yeah, picked up my bags. I did move for high school for a couple of years. So I lived with a host family, was thrown into kind of a pretty Irish environment. It was super fun and also odd at the same time. But essentially went to school there in the US. And then after college, I always assumed that I would go back to Switzerland and work in the financial sector, which is why I ended up getting a degree in finance. But ideally, I wanted to play basketball professionally for a few years. And it just so happened that I injured my knee pretty badly my last year in college. And so I took time to rest. And so I ended up taking a job with, of all companies, Nestle, which is a Swiss company headquartered not very far from where I grew up. So I got a lot of questions about whether I got hired because I was Swiss. As a result, moved to DC. I found rugby in DC and then moved for work to the Bay Area. And that's where I really got into playing rugby at a high level. The best club in the country at the time was in Berkeley. Basically just decided to go for a practice. The national team coach was the head coach. And so one thing led to another. I ended up playing for the US team for a little under 9 years. That's kind of why I got to the US. And then from Nestle is when I entered tech. And I'm happy to share a little bit more about that if you'd like.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. So your initial plan was to play basketball and then work in the finance sector. And then you fell in love with like rugby.
Yeah, it's so funny because, you know, being from Europe, you see rugby a lot, but I never had any interest. In fact, I thought it looked silly to me, and I never watched it when it was on TV. And then in college, two of my teammates after basketball went to a rugby practice, ended up playing for the club at college, and they had just started the club. And I went to watch a match, and I was like, this is such a dumb sport. I just couldn't understand. And then weird circumstances brought me to a practice, and the team was really mindful of my safety. So they're like, we're going to teach you a good technique first so that you can see that it can be safe. And I tackled from my knees, from the ground for an hour and a half. And I was just hooked. I love the contact. I love hitting people in a safe, controlled, refereed way, legal way, by the way. And it was like the rest was history. I just got hooked. I love the adrenaline of the sport and just the camaraderie. I found a lot of community there as well. So it's been super fun.
Amazing. I remember that I saw once in Brazil when I was still living there, a team playing rugby. And I thought it was really fascinated. I couldn't understand anything, but it was so fun.
Yeah, it's not an easy sport to pick up initially. I think that's what I like about it is there's so much strategy, there's so much to learn and so many ways to do things. But yeah.
That's so cool. And I read about your work helping professional athletes transition into the workforce. And I'd love to hear more about your transition to tech and your work helping other athletes.
I wanted to transition out of CPG because it just didn't feel like a really good fit for me. I had a friend that was working at Google and kept telling me, you need to come work with me. Like, I think you would have so much fun. I think you would love the culture here. And I applied a few times. I applied actually a lot of times. I had, I think, 25 interviews before I finally landed a position at Google. But I think each time I learned something from my interviews and I could tell like, oh, I see why I didn't really answer this in the right way. And not having a background in tech at all, I just needed to be able to tell my story in a way that it demonstrated that I could do it. And, you know, a lot of times they tell you like, yeah, you know, I'm a fast learner and all of this, but everyone says that. So how can you build a story around what it is that you're bringing? And with athletes specifically, when you think about it, I think only 2% of Olympic athletes can make a living from their earnings. And only a handful of athletes are sponsored. Most athletes are benefiting from the generosity of people around them, their families, their friends. Sometimes they have jobs on the sides like I did. Oftentimes they live below poverty level. Like there were a lot of people that lived inside the boathouse at the Olympic Training Center while they were training full time, right? And so what I'd like is to help people that maybe come into the workforce, don't have necessarily like the skill set that you would want to see in a resume, but being an athlete teaches you so much about what you need to be successful in the workforce. And that's where I really want to help people to tell their story and how that story translates into a positive story for an employer. It's something that I'm really passionate about. I feel like, especially in rugby, a lot of the women I played with had to sacrifice their professional lives a lot to represent their countries. Some were fired for going to the World Cup. Some took really extended leave of absences with no pay. Some had kids and families, and so it put a strain on their financial situation. And I don't think that that's a positive environment in which to perform at your best. And so whether you're doing it while you're playing or if it's after you're retired, I really want to help people find opportunities to be able to work in a corporate world.
Amazing. I love that. And I love that you also mentioned about telling your story. I think this is so important. And I have been thinking about that a lot, like your narrative and being a professional athlete. That's a lot you already know. And like the technical aspect, I feel that is like the easiest one, right? You learn as you go, you do a course. But like being able to collaborate with people to lead and work under pressure, this is not a skill that you learn right away, right? And athletes already have that. So this is really nice.
Yeah. And I think another thing is that you're basically someone that is maybe not naturally, but knows how to put the effort into learning new skill sets. Because oftentimes people think, oh, athletes are naturally gifted. And of course, there are people that are born with like athleticism. But, you know, just to take examples of people that the world admires, like, you know, Michael Jordan, he gets cut initially from making a team is just through hard work that he really harnessed that talent. Right. And so, you know, the repetition, you know, the dedication, you're pretty focused on that stuff. And so like you can get someone in a seat, you tell them, okay, you need to learn this, they're going to learn it. Maybe sometimes it's not going to work out, but I really feel like the attitude is there. The hunger for betterment, the hunger for perfection, for performance is there.
And your attitude regarding like the interviews at Google, like every time you were like, oh, I learned something new, so I can apply to the next one and I will learn more and more and more. And I love this attitude because it's not easy. It's really hard. I think this interview process is really long and it's exhausting. It's really challenging.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. After 25 interviews, when I finally got the job, I might have like done a few laps around. I was at rugby practice. I definitely lapped the field a few times. I was so excited.
Yeah, of course, of course. Celebrating every day after. I'm super curious about it. So I want to ask you, how was the experience playing a World Cup?
I played at the 2010 World Cup for 15s and then 2013 for sevens and then again 2014 for 15s. So for those of you that aren't familiar with rugby, there's two styles. And most people know 15s because that's where you see the scrum where all those like big players come together neck to neck. And there's 15 players on each side. It's 80 minutes. And then there's sevens. And then sevens is only seven players on the field. It's 14 minutes, but you play more games in a day. I first started playing 15s rugby and my first World Cup was for the 15s team. It was just an incredible experience overall because you get to represent, you know, the best athletes get to represent their country. In this case, I wasn't a U.S. citizen, but I had been in the U.S. for so long. And to qualify, you had to live in a country for 3 years uninterrupted. And for me, I just felt the passion of representing the U.S. internationally. And you do it with a lot of the people on the team were my best friends. You do it in a setting that was so professional. If you think about women's sports get a lot of really negative reputation, but there's really passionate fans. Like the performance of women's sports is just, oh, year after year after year, it's really getting so good. And the World Cup was in England that year, I think at the University of Surrey. English Rugby Union did such a good job of making it a professional event. There was like media, fields were beautiful, like the stands were packed. It was just like taking the World Cup to a new level. It was just incredible to be a part of it. My parents and my brother were able to come. So it was just an incredible feeling. You know, I think what's really encouraging is that the second time I went for 15s, it was in France and the French rugby union elevated the level one more time. And for the finals, it was like a million people that watched it on TV. It was in a huge stadium. Like all of the games, the last round were in a huge stadium. It was just a beautifully executed event. You get the chills every time you hear the national anthem. You get, you know, goosebumps. For me, I always thought before games, like each game could be your last. So you just play as if each game was a gift to you. Like you just never knew if you played another one. And so I felt like a heightened sense of pride and enthusiasm. So
it must be an incredible experience, like having your family watching you, a million of people. This is really exciting to have this emotion.
Yeah, to be clear, we weren't in the finals. So I don't know what the viewership was for our last game, but it's really cool to see that people tuned in. And this year it's in New Zealand this summer. I don't know what the conditions will be for people to be able to spect in real time. I would love to travel there, but of course we'll see where we are, but I'll definitely be spectating. I mean, just the athleticism of women's sports and women's rugby right now is so exciting.
Really cool. I will check that out and remember of you and trying to understand the rules. What should leaders keep in mind when helping others to be a better version of themselves? I'd love to hear your thoughts about it.
I love that question, first of all, because I don't think it's always the assumption that we're here to help people be the best version of themselves. That's definitely the way that I approach leadership is how do I get people to tap into their motivation, their talent? And so I think the key here is motivation. Everyone's motivated by different things. For me, for a long time, I didn't really know what motivated me professionally. It's just like, I just need to make a paycheck so I can play rugby and I can travel. And my work was a means to an end. And it's recently that I realized I'm really passionate about accessibility. And so knowing that each day, try to tap into that and remember the work that you're doing, it's allowing people to gain access to a software that allows them to design, makes it very easy for people to do that when design historically has been pretty expensive since you have to have a nice machine. And so now thinking about how do I help others do this? It's like really helping them understand what drives you. That's not going to be the same thing for a lot of people. From some people in sales, it's really just, I want to make money. okay, if that's what it is, then let's talk about that. But for some people, it's like, I want to have an impact. Okay, well, how do we make sure that you understand that? What does making an impact look like for you? And how do we make sure that each day you feel like you're driving towards that? And so it's finding those intrinsic values that people have that they want to reflect in their job. It's not always easy. It's not always obvious. I mean, it took me like 10 years to figure myself out. But as a leader, what I'm trying to do is have conversation or observe how people operate to tap into maybe those natural affinities that they might have, or maybe help them realize what it is that they like about their job. I think one thing I really loved about LinkedIn is that it was never about the job you have now. It's about the person you could be and the job that you want to have down the road. But you know what I really like is this thing. And if I can help them understand that and help them prepare for that in their current job, then I feel like my job as a leader is going to be successful.
I love that. It's beyond anything else, right? Because sometimes it takes a lot of time to figure out what you really love to do, what you really care. And when you have someone helping you in this journey to make sure that you are working with something that you absolutely love, this is really inspiring. And Figma is an amazing software. And it's also, it changes our mindsets, right? Because we can see the design right away. Even if you're like designing yourself, you're like collaborating with other person, or if you're just checking if it is ready, which can be scary too, right? You have like people all the time checking what you're doing, but it's incredible. And it's a really shift in the mindset that, especially like right now, since everyone is remote, I think about like the past, because we were like all the time checking, do we have the right version of the design of the file? Oh, it is in the server. Oh, is it on Google Drive? Or oh, it's not. It's like someone's computer and this person is on vacation, right?
We hear a lot of those nightmares, catastrophes for designers.
Yeah. And the name of the file, like, oh, design, blah, blah, version 29.
Final.
Final for reals.
Exactly. I really love Figma too. I feel very lucky to have found the company when I did. I am not a particularly good designer, but Figma makes me feel like it can be. And I spend a lot of time actually in the tool just playing around with it. Sometimes I put a slide together that I'm pretty proud of, and then I ask a designer, hey, could you just like take a look? And then they get it back to me and it's like completely different. I'm like, oh, okay. So not a designer yet, but it gets better every time.
Yeah, I use Figma for everything related to the podcast, and I do by myself. So it's been really nice journey. What does it mean to have a place in tech, in your opinion? I have been thinking about this a lot lately, and we're still the minority. Every day is a battle, right? So I'd love to hear your thoughts about it.
I think about that a lot as well, having a place in tech. I can't remember exactly who had said this to me, and not directly, but it was during, I think, on all hands. And I want to say it was at LinkedIn. Diversity, inclusion, and belonging, right? So diversity is to be asked to the dance. Inclusion is to be asked to dance. And belonging is to be able to dance like nobody's watching. I love this analogy because it's so simple and it really describes the experiences of so many BIPOC folks in tech. So I think a lot of companies are hyper-focused on the diversity piece, but that's, to me, just a statistics, not a game, right? Yes. It's like, okay, can we check as many boxes as possible around Latin folks, around Black folks, around LGBTQIA folks, whatever it is, right? Then some companies will elevate that to, okay, inclusion. All right, yeah, we're going to have some people at the table. They can say what they want. But you're still experiencing people talking over you, people repeating what you said, your opinion not being heard, or your idea not being adopted until someone else says it that looks a little bit more like the mainstream person in tech, right? Mm-hmm. That's an experience you're going to have over and over again. But I think really having a voice is little by little, feeling like your voice is heard, feeling like your opinions matter, feeling like you're having an impact. And I feel like so much of this is possible through advocacy and mentorship. It's not ideal because obviously you shouldn't have to rely on other people to make your voice count. But I have seen how powerful it has been for me personally to have people really respect me in positions of power and elevated my voice internally. I've been really lucky that in the last few years, I've been able to work for managers that have really embraced that, encouraged me to bring my full self to work. So obviously this is an audio podcast, but people describe me as androgynous, but I don't think I am, or like gender nonconforming, which that's everyone's, you know, that can be opinion. And it's totally fine. Like, I don't care really necessarily how people perceive me. But as a result, I think sometimes I was overlooked. I'm really lucky that I have had leadership that really believes in me, really listens to me. And so to answer your question specifically, I think first is trying to get in. And I really want to make sure that those opportunities are there. But once you're in, I really want people to think about the fact that oftentimes those employees are tokenized or disregarded. It's really important that we create space for those voices. And as a leader, I try to make sure that those voices are heard. My current manager, I know, does a really good job of making sure my voice is heard as well. And so that's why I talk about that mentorship and being taken a little bit under someone's wing.
I think your quote took a step further, right? Because inclusion is so much more about like how you feel. Can you feel yourself? Can you be yourself? Are you comfortable being yourself? So I really like that. And I love this mindset that diversity and inclusion, it's everyone's job. It's not just like the minorities. You should be doing something no matter where you are. You should speak up. You should do something. Don't expect only like the minorities to find their way, right? So and that was really inspiring. I love this quote.
I wish I remembered who said it, but it's always stuck with me. And it's something that I really is at the core of my values for sure. I feel like too many companies stop short of the belonging piece. Yeah, hopefully we start moving more towards a place of belonging for all.
Yeah, I hope that comes this year. What's your superpower?
Well, I really wish it was teleportation, but short of that at the moment, I'd say I am someone that's very resilient. I've been often described as resilient, but I really pride myself in that, whether it's physically, mentally, emotionally. I really take pride in bouncing back from whatever it is that I'm experiencing. I'll come back to the Google example. I think, I mean, after the third time you apply and you get shut down, you know, it hurts, it stings for sure. You have to bounce back, you have to learn something from it. And it's interesting because for a very long time, I think it was pretty fixed mindset. And so me talking this way is a very new way of talking about it. But I think that through resilience, I became much more adaptable. And I would say that that's also my superpower. And that's probably due to the fact that I am like bicultural. I do toe the line on a lot of different things. And so I think you have to be a little bit of adaptable when it's like that. And that's why, you know, you're able to go from one sport to another, or one industry to another, or one country to another, playing for the US initially, and then playing for Colombia. And so I think those things are probably my strengths. But ultimately, I like to approach everything I do with humor. And that's probably the main thing. I think the fact that I'm able to take things lightly and to make fun of myself when necessary and not be too serious about everything has also helped me a lot and helped me find humor in the hard moments and helped me continue.
And now, Natalie, I want to hear from you. What are the resources that helped you in your journey? It can be books, podcasts, courses, inspiring people. I love to hear from you. And this is something that I'm starting to ask all my guests, and I'm really excited to hear your tips.
This is maybe not super original, but the book Mindset for me was really something that helped me shift my approach to things. That's when I really learned how fixed I am in things other than sport. In sport, I always feel maybe not invincible, but I feel like if I put enough hours into my craft, I know that I will get better. But at work, I was always paralyzed by fear of failure, fear of opinions, judgment, feeling imposter syndrome pretty much every day. And then reading the book, it really helped me reframe the way that I thought about my job and the way that I was showing up in my professional space. Mm-hmm. Another book that really helped me is the book Legacy. It's actually a book about the New Zealand All Blacks. So it's the rugby team. And they're an extremely successful program. And it's written by an author that was able to spend time with the team. But there's a chapter in particular that talks about the Japanese concept of Kaizen, which is the constant pursuit of self-betterment. Like that really impacted me. I basically would quote the book all the time. I think I annoyed everyone around me. I think one thing that they say in the book is when you're at the top of the game, change the game. And I think it's easy to make a lot of decisions under pressure when the tides are turning, you know, the winds are changing and things like that. But what you really want to do is make hard decisions when you're doing your best, because you really want to challenge yourself and continue to create space between you and your competition, right? So you're create a new move in basketball or in rugby or whatever it is, you know, everyone's going to copy you. So then go think about the next thing you're going to innovate on. It's the same thing with Figma. I think a lot of the time it's like, oh, we're creating all these cool things and it's great. Figma is going well. There's a lot of adoption. So what hard decisions are we going to make now that we're doing well to continue to do well, right? And so I really love that. And another quote was go for the gap. And it's always like when you see an opening, like turn the wheels on, put your head down and just go for it. I played rugby that way. I was a very instinctive player. And so it like really resonated with me. So those two books, they're always on my shelf. I like give them to everyone when I can. Lastly, a podcast. I love How I Built This. I think it's cool to hear people's journeys on how they created their brands. And I really love the ones where it's someone just hustling. I think the FUBU story, I just loved because it was just hustling from beginning to end and being creative and like, you know, life gave him like a quarter of a lemon and he just like opened like a lemon shop. It's just so crazy. I was like, this guy is so smart and driven and creative and innovative. And so I just love hearing those stories. I really like the ones that are original and just not your typical, like, oh, I went through a Y Combinator and met such and such person. And, you know, I love those as well. There's a lot to be taken out of those stories as well. But the ones that really appeal to me are the people that were just like, yeah, so many doors shut in my face. And then I just get creative. So for those of you that don't know the podcast, I highly recommend it. It's really awesome.
Amazing. Thank you for the tips. I really like this podcast. This is an awesome tip. And it's interesting because I just read the book Mindset. I think it was the last book I read in 2020. So super exciting. And it was really interesting to me to have the realization that we are a mix of fixed mindset and open mindset, I would say. And to me, speaking about myself, I also realized that although I tried not to have a fixed mindset like everyone else, I have a fixed mindset related to art. I love art and I feel so inspired by it, but I don't know how to draw. And in my mind, I think I'm not able to learn how to draw. So it was interesting to me to think more about that. And maybe one day I will learn how to draw. I don't know.
Honestly, in the beginning, I almost didn't read it because I think the first chapter is a bit hard to get through in the beginning when you don't know all the concepts. But I'm so glad I stuck with it because even I could identify where some of the fixed mindset was coming from. Then it's so much easier to then take ownership of those behaviors for yourself. Sometimes awareness is the first step, right? And so being aware that you're being fixed and then you're like, oh my God, why? I'm the same as you for art. It's in writing. I hate my writing. It just makes me so annoyed. I just hear my thoughts like, this sucks, this sucks, this sucks as I'm writing. And so this year I did the 30-day challenge of writing 500 words every day and I ended up writing 20,000 words and probably just terrible, but I don't care because I did it. And it was cool to challenge myself and I'll probably never read it again. And I don't want to because I don't want to judge myself, but it was just cool to do it. And that's something I would have never done 5 years ago, you know?
And this reminds me of what you said about sports. And I think this can be applied to art too, because a lot of people sometimes they say, oh, this person is gifted because of that. They are so good. But in fact, I think in reality, those folks are hustling. They are working really hard every day. And maybe the consistency and the hard work that makes the difference, not like if the person is gifted or not. So this is definitely something we should think more about it and keep in mind.
Yeah, for a long time, I really thought like, oh, these guys are just like God-given ability and talent, you know, and you're like, oh, I can never touch that. And then you just listen to all of them talk and they're like, no, I just worked my ass off. And you're like, okay. And then they're like, yeah, I was in the gym, first person in the gym, last person out of the gym. Like I installed a hoop at my house. So I was shooting from bed. You know what I mean? Like they just were constantly working on their craft, working on their skill. And so, yeah, I mean, there's no really like magic solution to something unless you put the time into it and really work at it. I mean, maybe you have some advantage, right? Maybe you have like perfect pitch. And of course, some people are born and they can't really sing, but you might get better with work, right? You know, you're born like Phelps, where you have a body that's amazing to move through water, but he still worked very, very hard for all the successes that he's had. It's like the podcast, how I built this, like how much of it is luck and how much is hard work. I think athletes ask themselves that question a lot as well.
Thank you for your tips, Natalie. I'm definitely adding the legacy book in my list. I want to thank you for your time and for being so open with us and sharing your story and your journey. That was really inspiring. And I'm going to link to the description of this podcast all the resources Natalie mentioned in this interview. And I also want to add that Natalie has a Wikipedia page. I'm going to list that there. When I was researching about you, I saw your Wikipedia page and I was thinking, oh, this is so cool. I love that.
Yeah, I learned that through someone who told me about it. I was like, oh, that's cool. Idea. Yeah, thank you for this opportunity. It was really great. I appreciated the thoughtful questions and the conversation.
And that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. I'm so excited to have Natalie as our first guest for 2021. We have more guests and they are so special, and we have someone for each Latin America country every episode. And a spoiler for the next one, we are going to talk with an entrepreneur. He is going to share with us his learnings, his journey. I think that'll be really exciting. Talk to you soon. If you want to follow us, our handle is Latinx in Power in all social media channels. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And if you want to be extra, you can also share a comment on Apple Podcasts, because this helps us a lot to bring this podcast for more people. And I also love to hear your thoughts. So see you soon.